At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Oh my goodness. Okay. What I was saying is it's a pleasure to have you on. It's been really cool to connect with so many people from all over and to learn more about their stories and their lives. And I found it really fascinating for you to know, or I mean, to know about your story as a comedian. I'm just so curious to know, like, how do we get into that space? Like, what made you become a comedian out of all occupations?
Well, it really started on a dare in 2012. And I was just only doing it for charity. So I would do it every year. And then I think after 2019, I didn't do it again. But again, it was a dare. Oh, I'm Facebook funny. You know, I'm everyday funny, but I didn't think I was stage funny. So the pandemic happened. And I think I had like a midlife crisis. I'm not sure. But I was literally sitting at my desk. I was a branch manager and I'm sitting at my desk and I started crying. Like, just,
wow.
I was unhappy. I was unhappy with so many aspects of my life. My youngest son was graduating high school. What am I going to do next? My kids don't need me as much anymore. So what am I going to do next? And I really semi-retired to do an online store. The comedy came second because I would do, of course, social media is a necessary evil. So I started doing TikTok videos. And then I looked up one day, I had 10,000 followers. And a lot of my followers were saying, you're super funny. And one guy came in my inbox and he said, you have the comedic timing of Richard Pryor. First of all, you must be drunk, but I'll take that. So I said, while I'm on this journey, I'll just get back to doing comedy. And I started putting feelers out there and I have been booked every month since 2021, since I came out. It may not be big show. Now, I've been in a field with some kids running around doing comedy, but I have been consistently booked. And I just came from Vegas a couple weeks ago, so it's going exceptionally well.
Wow. So a dare. So what was this dare, like, do like an open mic? Like, what exactly was the dare?
So it was a breast cancer. It was a charity event for breast cancer. And what she wanted to do is to get people that were funny, but not necessarily comedians. And she called it MILFs. Mm-hmm. And we ain't got to spell that out. Someone suggested me to her, and again, they just kept saying, I bet you can't do it, because I have issues. You can't tell me I can't do something. I'm gonna try to do it. And so I had a couple friends just, I bet you can't do it. And I just got up there and talked about motherhood. Mm-hmm. And the people were laughing, and I'm like, okay, that's a fluke. You know, these people are drunk, they'll laugh at anything. And so she would ask me to come back every year. And she was like, you really are good. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I was just doing it for charity. Like, it was not for money. It was just, you know, it was for a good cause. Breast cancer, period, you know, runs rampant in my family. So I was like, if it's a way for me to give back, I'll do it. And then an actual comedian from here in my hometown, Tuscaloosa, Steve Brown, he's been trying to get me to do open mics for years. Again, on Facebook funny. I didn't think I was stage funny. You know, that's two different things.
Right.
And so when I really start really getting on stages and really seeing that it was, I have fun, like it's a passion, like I always want to do a good job and I absolutely love it. And the things that I have been able to do in a short period of time lets me know that this is my purpose, that this is my next step in life. So.
Yeah. So what has comedy taught you? I mean, it started off as a dare. You kind of just want to get into doing something different. You talk about the story as a branch manager. What is the biggest lesson that comedy has taught you?
That is a gift. That is actually a gift, because I have been able to make people laugh when they're at their lows. You know, I have been able to make people laugh at funerals. Again, never knew that it was actually a gift. A lady stopped me outside of Walmart. She scared the crap out of me because I'm not used to people knowing me that I don't know. And so with the social media and everything else and the following that I have, there are people that know me that I don't know. So I'm walking out of Walmart and I'm probably looking like a 75-year-old woman because I got 75 colors on. And she was like, she was like, I saw you at the start on. And I said, oh, okay. And she was like, it's a blessing, the gift that you have. I said, a gift? She was like, yeah. And she gave me some scriptures just to look. She was like, you think that you're doing something minute. She was like, but I had just lost my daughter a couple months ago and my family made me come out. And that was the first time I laughed. And since she was sick. And so I was like, you know what? And then I just thought about it. I always bring laughter. Like if I come in the womb, I always bring laughter. I was even losing my mom. The nurses were looking around like we were absolutely crazy. My mom was decided that she didn't no longer wanted to have any care. So she was going to hospice. And when I walked in, they said she had been upset all day because she didn't know how I was going to respond. And I walked in the room. I said, I know doggone well you're not trying to leave me. And they're like, what? But that's how I have been my entire life. I don't know how to do anything without bringing humor. I don't know how to deal with, and it may be, you know, a little immature, but at the same time, if I can make you laugh, it makes me feel better. It makes me know that you will feel a little bit better. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an amazing outlook to have. With all of the comedy shows that you've done, is there always like one that's always like stood out to you that kind of made you realize like I'm really good at what I'm doing?
Yes. So here we, you know, we don't have a professional team in Alabama, so it's either football, college football, or high school football. You know, And so my school here is pretty. My alma mater is pretty big, so it has a homecoming every year, and it's huge. Thousands of people come into the city. So they decided to start doing a comedy show, so I was asked to open. Because, again, I'm a novice, and I looked up. My name is on the screen. My picture is up there, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then my name is announced, and the people are hollering and cheering, and I was like, this is for me. And then I went out there. I didn't have 5 minutes, but 5 minutes can be a long time if you're not funny. And I'm doing my thing and I'm feeling it. Like I'm in it. I'm just in it. When I get off and I was like, you know what? You know, this might be your thing. And one of my good friends, she texts me. Now, she's never seen me perform before because she was scared that I was going to suck and she didn't want to tell me. And so that was her first time seeing me. And that's real honest. Like, I get it. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to brain on your friend's parade. And I had a text. I picked up my phone. And I had a text message from her. And it said, you funny for real. She's like, oh, I've never missed another show because you're funny for real. And I did not want to see you until I knew that you were funny for real. And the lighting guy told me I won. So I was like, okay, sorry. This might be a thing. Because you're talking about a room of over 500 people, and you can hear the laughter all the way around. And a comedian that's been in the game for like 16 years, Ashima Franklin, she pulled me to the side and told me I had something. And I was like, okay, I'm not delusional, you know? You went out again. Can't hear
you. Oh, wow.
There you
go.
Yeah.
Know what going on. This is like never happened before, so this is weird. Maybe this is what I need to learn how to loosen up. As a comedian and learning on the fly, it sounds like, what do you think is the ultimate key to being successful in that space? You mentioned 5 minutes feeling like forever.
The thing about being successful in there is I treat it like any other job. I treat it like another job. I'm making sure I'm on time. I'm dressed to impress. And I sit back and I be quiet. But the other thing is I study comedy. I love comedy. I remember my mom letting me listen to Richard Pryor. And I wasn't supposed to, but, you know, hey. So I watch everybody comedy special. I don't care if you're white, black, Asian. I don't care the race. I just love a comedy. And then I realized what kind of comic I was, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm more in the line of sarcasm, like Bill Burr, Dave Chappelle, or something like that.
Those people,
you know what I'm saying? I'm not physical. I'm not going to flip and I'm not going to laugh at myself. I say it and wait for you to catch on to it, you know? And so just being a lover of comedy.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You have to study your craft and you have to get your reps in, because I do a lot of open mics and there's a lot of unfunny people that think they're funny because people are laughing to be polite. I'm not laughing to be polite. If you don't make me laugh, I'm sorry. I can't. I don't do participation points. But there's a lot of people out here that are getting participation points. And then I do know that there's different sense of humor. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody doesn't, may not get your joke. And so I do give people some type of grace for that. But they don't take it. In order to be good at something that you're doing, you have to practice. And you're going to have to do a lot of free work. You're going to have to do a lot of free work. And I think that's the difference between the mediocre and the great, is just putting in the work and learning comedic timing and knowing how to, either you, and the sad part is, it's just like anything else. Either you have it or you,
don't. Right.
And that's the crazy thing. Just like I said, I do a lot of open mics. And I'm just sitting there like, they must be trying to get away from their wife, because I know. They're not.
It's just not it.
No, it's not. Because you know, it's a lot of people that, because their cousin told them that they were funny or laughed at a joke, that they think they can get on stage. But if you don't, if you don't have the timing, and you have to be somewhat smart, you know, because you got to look at a Carlos Miller. I love Carlos Miller. I think he's smart.
Yeah,
but he's smart. You know, DC Young Fly, Chico Bink, they're smart. That makes them good comedians. You can't just be silly and turn flips in class and people laugh at you. You have to have something to say. And so I think that's the biggest thing. I think is the know-how and to know how to relate to people.
Yeah. No, that kind of helps me with the next part. With today's climate, and I think for comedians itself, I think the material has changed a bit to me. I think when I think of 90s comedy, it was a lot more free flowing. I think of an outlier like a Dave Chappelle who still kind of goes with those topics. But has that changed your approach? Have you tried to make it digestible, or are you just up there as your natural self?
As my natural self. And I've always stayed away from that type of stuff because, you know, I'm 47. So I was raised in an era where you don't talk about politics and religion. You know what I'm saying? Like, you stay away from those subjects. So I always tell people my stance, because I'm not a, I don't, if you don't like me, that's fine. And so I don't care about you knowing my stance. Like, I don't mind talking about politics, but I'm not going to just, that's not my whole thing. And I don't even bring it on stage. My material is mostly my life and these children and raising them. And so I try to stay away from those things on stage, because even my demographic on TikTok is mostly middle-aged white women. I would have never thought.
I wouldn't have either of them.
I would have never thought. And so that is my demographic. So again, even with this presidential election, I made sure people know who I was voting for, like draw a line in the sand. And the reason why I draw a line in the sand, you know, and voting against your best interest, in my opinion. But at the same time, if you're not picking with me, I'm not picking with you. You just won't be invited to my house. You know, you can think what you want to think. You just won't ever eat dinner at my house or anywhere, a dinner anywhere with me. Like, I won't kick it with you. I won't skate with you.
Which is nothing.
But like, if you know, but I don't want anybody to feel any type of way at a show, because I take classes as well. And that's one thing they tell you to stay away from when you go on stage, is to try to stay away from politics. And, you know, just stay away from those things. And you can talk about, they even tell you to stay away from, what you call it, current events.
Yeah.
But you can still tie it in, because if you're shooting a comedy special, a current event is not going to be so current in 10 years. You know what I'm saying? Especially if it wasn't a wild, you know, a worldwide thing, you know, a few people knew about it. But so yeah, I try to stay away from that, because that, like I said, even on my social media, it's mostly me being menopausal and my children getting on my nerves. I have a video that went viral talking about menopause. You just be lucky you don't have to deal with it. Yeah,
my mom has just shared her experience with that. So,
yeah, be nice. Be nice to your other at all times.
Oh, always. You know, she'll forget something. She'll be like, it's the menopause. I'm like, you know, I get it.
Yeah, just walk into a room hot for no reason, mad for no reason. And you have to have the emotional. If you're not emotional intelligence in menopause, you would literally go crazy. So some days I wake up and I'm like, why am I so angry? Girl, sit your crazy.
Wow. Speaking of motherhood, when you transitioned to comedy, how did that work in your everyday life? I'm assuming you had to travel a lot more.
Yeah, I have the only thing it was because I have a 6-year-old grandson. And so I believe in God. I don't know about everybody else, but that's my belief. And so there's always things I feel like God is whispering to me. Even when I got ready to leave that job, I was going to try to last for another year. And he told me plainly one morning I woke up, he said, I told you to leave. I didn't say wait February. I was like, okay. Okay. And so with my daughter, I had since I left my job in 2021, I had been telling her little small things like, hey, I can't keep him at night anymore. You're going to have to get a day job. You know what I'm saying? Right. And I would tell her, hey, you need to get a job that fits around his schedule because I can't do as much as I used to because I used to take, you know, drop him off and pick him up from school. And so there was little things that was whispering. Now it's to the point where listening to those whispers, I don't have to get ready because I was already ready. So
ready.
Yeah, because now I'm traveling. Like I said, I did Toronto in October, Vegas just a couple weeks ago. I'm hopefully to be picked up for this 10-city tour. And so I don't have to make adjustments. So because I listen and I paid attention to those little signs and got them ready because everybody's an adult now. So most of the time they just look up and say, what are you doing in New Orleans?
Oh, my goodness. You're a trip. I think I truly think this is so cool. You also give me the confidence not to do open mic no more. I've been joking with my friends. I'm like, I want to do a 5-minute thing, not because I'm funny, but I really respect the art. Like, I think it's a true art and a true craft. And so when people talk down on comedians, I'm like, you know how hard it is to go up there for 5-10. But
they really think it's easy.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing that people don't understand is that everybody's just looking at you expecting for you to make them laugh. Like, they're just like, yeah. And it's hard to make Black people laugh.
It is.
Black people expectations are high. And that's the other thing I like too, the different audiences. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can be in front of, I remember I did a event for a charity here this summer here in Tuscaloosa. And the lady said, oh, this is a real comedian. What are the rest of everybody else? Because the stardom here in the Southeast is like revered. And I've been on that stage plenty of times, which is a blessing. Yeah. And so with me performing at the stardom and traveling, even though I don't think where I'm supposed to be, the people, my peers think that I'm doing phenomenally well. And I'm like, well, my bank account not reflecting it. But and so the room was majority, that was my first time being in a majority white room. And I could just say something and they were just laughing. Like, it's just they're ready. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, I don't get that but you know what?
Why do you think that's the case? Why do you think it's such a difficulty behind that within our culture? Laughter.
I think with our culture, and I know this from experience and people don't want to admit it, even with me working in banking, you show up, they're automatically not liking, and you have to make like.
Yeah.
When my mom passed, I moved back to the west side of town. I live off of Martin Luther King, so that tells you it's not a great side.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's not the worst, but it ain't great either. So I remember, let's be honest. So I remember going to the local Family Dollar, minding my business. I got my suit on because I just got off work. The young lady giving everybody coupons. But because I'm dressed nice, I'm face made up, I'm chipper. Hey, how are you doing? She wouldn't give me a coupon. I said, why you didn't give me a coupon? You gave the other four people a coupon. And she was just, it took me 2 months to win these people over. And one lady said, well, I thought you was stuck up.
What?
And people used to do me so bad in the credit union. Like, they would come in and automatically think because I'm in charge and I'm Black that I got an issue with. And then once they realized that I was, they don't want to admit it, but we will treat each other the worst.
Yeah, self-hatred, for sure.
And it's just a stigma, like, you think you better than me. It's even like that on social media. I have people in my inbox because they're finding me. You know, Facebook is local. TikTok is my strangers. So I have people still in my inbox saying, oh, my cousin from California sent me a video and we've been friends for years. Girl, I've been posting flowers for 3 years now. You haven't. So it's just, I don't understand the stigma, the mindset, but we will treat each other. So it's almost like we have to impress.
Impress, yeah.
We have to impress. Oh, she's just not cute. She's funny, too. So I guess other comedians even treat me like that. I get no respect until I get off the stage.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
No, I didn't know. Because I show up, I always tell people I give them KFC. Thighs, breasts, and legs.
I can't.
So, there, I guess I can't be decent looking and funny. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And so, but when I get off stage and I hear the crowd, it's like, oh, you're funny. And everybody want to do fist bumps. And I'm like, I was funny before I went on stage. Because I guess I treat everything like a job. Hey, how are you doing? I'm very customer service oriented. And it's like, right. Oh, hey.
I could be wrong. Do you think it's because you're a Black woman? You think that plays a big role in that?
I think it plays a huge role in there. I think it plays a huge role because the men don't do each other like that. They buy each other shots. They're talking to each other. We gonna kill it. And, you know, and I'm like, oh, I'm not a contender. We'll see. Just a minute.
Right.
Oh, wow. So how do you navigate through that with that notion? I mean, I'm sure you're used to it now, but like at first, like how did you manage through that?
I've never had an issue with being like, it's never bothered me. But that's how my mom raised me, though. I'm an only child. And so, yeah, so with me and my mom, you know, only children, you don't have nobody. You go bother your mama. Mm-hmm. And so coming home from school, crying about somebody not liking me or doing something to me, she always had a solution that did not include her. It was either F them people, no people return. You know, she would always say something like, or I remember coming home and a little girl didn't want to talk to me anymore. She said, her mama crackhead, she got problems. I was never coddled. I was never able to feel sorry for myself or, you know, it's always a condition. Like people are mute. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like she really told me about the human aspect of sometimes you're mistreated, not because of anything that you've done. It's something psychologically wrong with that person or they have their own issues and they don't realize it. So navigating that way. And again, I'm my only child, so I don't have a problem with being by myself or to myself. And most of the times, I will sit in a corner by myself and I'll just let the people come to me because sooner or later you're going to need me for something. Now, you know, then they'll want to work with me. Then they see my social media following. Oh, you doing this on TikTok? And I'm like, I ain't killing it now. I don't have millions of followers, but you know, compared to their 1,000 and my 60,000, of course, that seems, you know, like I'm killing it. And then even growing my following on Facebook, then they want to work with me because I've executive produced a comedy special.
Oh, really?
I'm waiting for them to give me a feature date that's been picked up by this this site, and I'm just waiting for them to give me a date. But yeah, I executive produced a comedy special. I was in banking for 15 years. Your girl knows something. I am an asset. Yeah. I'll help people any way I can, but I can't take everybody on, so I just wait for my people. That's just how, even with social media, I look for my people. You know, for the people to be on to me. I'm not trying to have a whole bunch of people just follow me and for no reason. I want people to actually love me, want to hear me, engage, interact with me. And so I don't do follow trains and all that other crap and big people to follow me. And I don't understand why I don't have more followers. I just like the organic growth and the fact that the people that do mess with me, they really do mess with me.
Yeah, no. Okay. So you mainly are on TikTok and Facebook.
Yeah, I do Instagram too, but Instagram never shows me love. I really don't understand.
Instagram is a little tricky, yeah. It is.
I get violated a lot. Like, since Facebook owns Instagram, how am I getting violated on Instagram, but don't get violated on Facebook? And I don't have the bandwidth to try to care or figure it out. So I just post and, you know, and go on. And I know with my shows, I'm getting more followers on Instagram just for my shows because a lot of people like to follow me from Instagram and go on. So,
yeah. So what's the ultimate goal with all this? It sounds like to me. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. Oh, the ultimate goal is right. Again, I am not. I don't think 47 is old, but I do think it's a little too old for some of this stuff. So my ultimate goal is to get. I'm 47. I can't stay up at this time, and I'm out here performing. It's just late at night, so. But I've done an outline for a sitcom, and so I really want to get into writing shows and continue to produce comedy, because the series that I started was Bama Got Something to Say. And I want to focus on comedians from Alabama, all over the state of Alabama. And I want to highlight them and put them on TV so somebody else could see them. And I just want to keep that name going. And again, I just want to get into writing. I want to be at a point where I could cross my legs and be on the beach and submit scripts and sell one a year. Because the goal is not to be ultimately wealthy. It's just not to have to work for anybody else and to leave some money there. So. I don't want it all. I just want a little piece of it.
I love that. Actually, no, that's a little piece. I mean, I think that's everybody's objective, is to do something and leave it behind. I mean, I think in the beginning you said how important just your faith is to you. How have you navigated those experiences when you've had doubt? And I'm sure doubt has happened.
It happens a lot because I dusted on my resume last year. But again, it's just I have a great circle of friends. All of my friends are faith, you know, faith walkers. So when I get weak, they're there for me. Even the guy that I'm dating, he pushes me, and he won't. You know, it's just like having those people. And my kids, like the people around me, believe that I can do the things that I say I'm gonna do. So when I'm faltering. Or get quiet, they'll call and check on me and see. So it's really my support system. I'm very blessed at that, because I'm telling you, I was ready to go back to work because I was like, Monday through Friday, you know, this 75, 80,000 a year, what that bad? What that bad? A bonus every now and then. So, but yeah, I will credit my social circle.
Yeah, so when do you typically perform? What, Thursday through Sundays?
It depends. It just depends on the job, because I also do host things. I do clean comedy. I got a dirty mouth, but if you see, I behave.
I was going to tell you in the beginning, I was going to give you the green light.
Nope. I be shit. Nobody. Just not, you know. know that, right? I just choose not to. But so I do clean comedy. So I'm always working, again, hosting. I've hosted karaoke's, parties, just to keep their portfolio open, because I always want to be ready for whatever comes my way. You know, this is one of, because I've been to too many shows. It's like, can you host? I've never hosted before. I can. So just, again, I just love comedy, and there's so much you can do in comedy without ever stepping on the stage. So.
Yeah.
I can't hear you.
Oh my gosh. What am I not?
There you go. Whatever you did.
I don't know. I'm a fire this boy. I don't know, baby. So I think this is God telling me just to be okay with how things are going left. Okay. This is so random. This has never happened. But my question for you, being from Alabama, I feel like there's a lot of pride that you have. What is something about being from Alabama you think people don't know about people from Alabama? Like, where's the, you know?
I hate to say that people are like, oh, you're from Alabama because I got good sense. That's the biggest misconception for me, because when I was in Toronto, you know, people are like, well, where are you from? I'm from the United States. What part of the United States? Alabama. And so when I went on stage, I said, when I say I'm from the United States, everybody gets sad. And then when I tell them I'm from Alabama, they start trying to feed me and give me money. It's not a third world country. Like, they're not little kids running around barefoot. Like, we got shoes.
Oh, my God.
We own homes. We have jobs. And so that's the biggest thing. And people always think that that it's super racist. Let me tell you about the races in Alabama. They're very undercover, okay? And never had anybody come up to me in my face and say anything crazy. Like, I've never been called the N-word to my face. On the phone, at a job, yes. But in my face, nobody just came up. Like, they... It's covert. Like, we know what they stand for, because you can tell we're a red state. You know, even the city I live in is ran by a Democratic mayor, but it's still a red count. You know what I'm saying? So I know who the majority of my county voted for, but they're not acting like that in the streets. They're not acting like that in the stores or at work. And so I think that's the biggest misconception. They think that if I step outside my house, I'm getting lynched. No, absolutely not. You gone again.
No. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I think I got the title for this episode. I can't hear you. So, Glitch City. I definitely might be it. I think that's a great point. I think that's a very valid point. I've only been to Alabama once, by the way.
So, and where are you from?
From St. Louis.
Okay. See, I've never been to St. Louis.
I was going to ask. I'm like, yeah, have you done a show in the U.S. at Chicago, St. Louis? Mm-mm. I don't know.
I think I'll be in Chicago about the summer. But yeah, but St. Louis, I've never been to.
Do you have any perspective of a St. Louis person? Has anybody ever told you about St. Louis people?
Outside of seeing Nelly, no. Nelly and Fair Deal of Time Group, like, your mic went out again.
No. What about now?
Yeah, like when you move, you're fine. I don't know where.
I'm telling you, this is...
Oh. Yep, you're gone again.
Let me see something. I'm about to hold on. Hold on. Whoa. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. I'm trying to think. Still good?
Yep.
Yep. We're just going to flip it. Yep. We're just going to drop the mic. That's what we're going to have to do for the remaining part.
My question was, like, you know, outside of Nelly and such an entertainer, you said you may be visiting Chicago in the summer, hopefully.
Yes, because that's my biggest thing now is to get out of Alabama. I've been over to Atlanta a few times, but yeah, just trying to network and get out of the city. That is my goal for 2025. So that's what I've been doing this last quarter is getting out of the city. I didn't expect to get out of the country, but that was amazing within itself. When they said, tell God your plans. But the setup and all the work I've been doing is to get me out of the state. And I think it's looking really good. 2025 is looking, then I'm going to be able to do a lot more traveling.
Okay, that's good. I'm super excited. Hopefully you come this way. I would love to actually see you live. I'm kind of upset you was in Vegas. I'm actually going to Vegas this weekend. That would have been great to watch and see. For the sake of my mic technical difficulties, I did have a final question for you. What does it mean to be human to you?
Accepting and accountable. I think that's what a lot of people are missing. Because even with me believing in God, there are so many people that want to push out another group of people because it's not their thing. But you sit in the middle of your bed and eat a pound of Oreos every night. That's gluttony. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all got issues, and I think we need to be more accepting and accountable. When you mess up, it's okay to say I'm sorry. It's okay to say that I messed up. And I think that's the biggest thing of me being human, and a lot of things that are missing with people is just accountability and accepting. Because life is hard enough. We all got some type of issues, no matter what we are. We all have issues. And if you're more accepting and open, you would have way more friends and you wouldn't be so miserable.
Yeah, I love that. That was good. That was a round of applause worthy. Oh, so where can people find you on social media for those who want to know more about you?
Yeah, I can be found on everything under Mika Carey, MEKACAREY, everything except for on Christian Mingle. This big booty women love Jesus too on Christian Mingle. Everything.
That makes me want to go into the other question. Were you on Christian Mingle at one point?
No, this way. For some reason, pastors love me. I don't know why, because I would be like a bad addition to their church. A horrible deal. I don't want to be anybody first lady. And so that's where that joke came from, because it was like, why do pastors think that I am I cuss and I drink like a sailor and I like greens. What would make you think that I would be a good addition to your flock? This is it. So, but yeah, Mika Care across all social media platforms.
Well, Tamika, thank you so much for joining and sticking out through all my technical difficulties. It was so great to hear about your story. Super excited to see what all you got to do for the rest of this year and going into 25. Hopefully you will have that script next year, which shows picked up. Would love to see you in your show soon. I really would. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your name, truly. So thank you so much. If you listen to this, please make sure to subscribe to the pod on your favorite audio platform. Make sure you check out Tamika's content. She is hilarious. Before I watch this, and I am like, hooked now, so now it's like I need to like binge watch all her content so I could be a part of that middle-aged white woman crowd. So I appreciate you guys. Until next time, peace.